brought forth a nation from Abraham.
For we delight in your Shabbat,
and spared his son Isaac, providing the ram.
For we delight in your Shabbat.
One, two. Okay, Shabbat Shalom, everybody. We're glad you're here. We have a very special guest today, an old acquaintance, friend from many years ago. Senator Lundberg was a customer of mine at the Manna Bagel Company, and he wanted my. I'll tell you a little story. He wanted my newspaper rack. It was wrought iron, and my wife didn't want to part with it. And he was persistent. He wanted that rack. He even offered to pay for it, and she didn't want to part with it. And I don't know where it is today. I think we sold it with the bagel shop, actually. I don't know who he is. But I gave him what he did want, which was the recipe for a soup. So that's even better. So he's got the soup recipe, but he and I go back many, many years, and we've recently come back into contact, and I asked him if he would come. Actually, I saw him in 2019. I was invited by the lieutenant governor to pray over the Senate. That was a wonderful day. And enjoyed that very much. It was a real honor for me, and I saw him there that day, but I haven't seen him since until recently. So I asked him if he would come and talk to us, answer some questions, and he agreed. And I didn't expect him to really come when the snow forecast, but he said he would be here. And so I am glad you guys are here, and all of you who came out, and those of you who are watching on live stream and on Facebook, you can set that up, Josh. So, right there. It's fine. So let's pray. Have a word of prayer, and then I'll turn it over to Senator Lundberg. By the way, I should by way of introduction, his wife is Lisa Lundberg, and she was one of my best customers at the Manna Bagel Company. She would come in with her tennis partners, and they would sit for hours schmoozing and eating tomato basil soup and bagels and salads and all kinds of good stuff. And then some egregious landlord stole the parking lot from them. So we won't name his name. But anyway, he was a commander in the Navy when I knew him mostly. Now then he became a captain. He was promoted. He served 29 years, I believe, in the Navy, and he's now currently in the Naval Reserve, and he served 6 terms in the Tennessee Legislature in the House of Representatives. And then in 2016, he was elected to the Senate of the state of Tennessee. And when were you appointed the deputy lieutenant governor?
1 year.
1 year ago, he was appointed deputy lieutenant governor of the state of Tennessee. So he's I'm trying to encourage him to go for it when Randy McNally takes a vacation. When he decides to actually not. You know, a man once said to my father, "Aaron, are you going to retire?" And my father said, "Well, man, I'm thinking about it." And my father's friend said, "This isn't a dress rehearsal, you know." So this isn't a dress rehearsal. So anyway, so I hope he does decide to do it. But if he doesn't, I can understand. And anyway, he'll tell you more about himself. One question that was asked is to explain how the lieutenant governor can be the executive branch is mixed with the legislature, if you would answer that. And let me turn it over to Senator John Lundberg. Oh, I'm going to do a blessing, yes. Thank you. Let's all bow our heads. Heavenly Father, we just come before you and we give you thanks for this Shabbat, this day that you have made. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. We just thank you that you are in control of all things and that you bless the words of our mouth. Let the words of our mouth and the meditations of our heart be pleasing and acceptable in your sight. And bless Senator Lundberg as he comes. Anoint him. Anoint our ears to hear and the people watching. Anoint our eyes to see. May we learn. May we not leave here the way we came in. May we be changed and transformed by what we've heard today. I pray in Yeshua, in Jesus' name. Amen. Please welcome Senator Lundberg.
Mess anything or everything up if I don't stand up there? Can I just wander?
No, we can move that around.
So, you're going to hate me, aren't you? Okay, I'm a wanderer, so.
That's okay.
Rabbi Joe, thank you.
I'm a wandering Jew.
Thank you for the blessing, and thank you also for praying with me earlier.
Pleasure.
The most important thing we do. Let me answer that question for you up top of, we're not really mixing the legislative and executive branch. In Tennessee, I believe I'm not certain if it's just us or there are two other states that the lieutenant governor is actually the speaker of the Senate. And the Senate votes on whomever we want to be our speaker. And obviously for the past eight years, it's been Randy McNally. And that automatically makes him the lieutenant governor of the state. So, and that's how that transpires. Been that way forever, in a good way. I was asked also when I came in, so your topic today is disaster, right? I said, no, that's not really the message that I want to talk about. I thought what I'd do is talk for keep it brief, just talk about Tennessee and what's going on, and then open up to questions. And I know Rabbi Joe said, well, you know, I've tried to, I want to be careful with the questions you get so they don't go out too far. And let me be candid with you. I'm not concerned about any questions, so if you do not get your question answered, I will answer it for you. So I've been doing this long enough that part of it is asking questions that, frankly, are uncomfortable. And I think that's a good role for government. It shouldn't be always comfortable, and we need to be tested and challenged. And frankly, when I talk to people, and one of the things I talk about is we have a tendency, and I say we as a people have a tendency, to exalt people in certain positions and say, I can't talk to them because they're so-and-so and they're so-and-so. My perspective, the governor, and we've got a good, strong governor in Bill Lee, if the governor doesn't like me, he can't fire me. Our Speaker of the Senate, Randy McNally, is a great individual. He can't fire me. You can fire me. That means you're my bosses. So that means if you have a question, I must answer it. If you reach out to me, I need to answer it. I'll be very candid. And I know, trust me, I know I'm being broadcast and all that. So, but when people email me, it'll be used. But I'll be candid, but it's truly what happens. I get about 300 emails a day. And I delete about 210 of them because they're from Memphis or they're from Nashville or they're from Chattanooga. And no disrespect to them, but they're not my people and the people that are most important to me. When I get questions or emails from people in Bristol or Kingsport or Johnson City, even though Johnson City's not in my district, you're talking my area. And my area technically is also all of Sutherland County, all of Hawkins County. So let's talk about Tennessee. Tennessee is doing great. In my perspective is, I know you've got questions on Ukraine and fuel prices and things like that, but my purview is the state of Tennessee and how we're doing. And I'll tell you, we're doing great. And you look at that, and I judge that based on our economy, how we're doing, the people that are coming here, the businesses that are not only starting here but expanding and moving here. We have triple A bond ratings from every major investment company. Road debt, we have zero road debt. So we're what you call a pay-as-you-go state. So we start building roads, building bridges, and repairing roads when we've got the money to do it. And that's put us in a great financial shape. Obviously, you know, we have no state income tax. And it seems like every time we cut taxes, more money comes in. And we've got economically, we're in great shape. We have a fully funded pension plan. And we have a rainy day fund, about $1.5 billion in the bank for times when times are good right now. But frankly, we also know that's cyclical and that will change. Things will not always be rosy. So I think we're in an incredibly solid financial position. In my, as Rabbi Joe said, I've been in, served 5 years or five terms in the House. A House term is 2 years, a Senate term is 4 years. So I served 10 years in the House. I've served 6 years so far in the Senate. The one thing I will tell you that I've never seen that I've seen right now is the amount of money that's out there. It's phenomenal. And if you say, how much? Put that into perspective. Last year's budget that we passed, that we're in right now, was about $42.5 billion. A lot of money. This year's budget, there's no new taxes, no debt. We have $52 million. That's $10 billion in additional funds that we got from the federal government. So, and there's also $3 billion that we got from people buying things, because we have a sales tax-based economy, and people are spending money and they're buying things. I encourage you all to go buy things, so but within reason. But that's how we make money, and as people spend more, the state accumulates more. And we're a very fiscally conservative state. We're a very conservative state, and I think that shows, which means when we budget and we get estimates of, you know, growth is going to be 4%, well, then we'll budget for growth of 3.5% or 3%. So when we budget down here and the amount of money exceeds that, that gives us a great cushion. Difficult part for that, I will tell you, it's a lot easier being a legislator when there's no money, because every group that comes up and says, hey, we could use $1 million for this, it's easy to say, we don't have any money, can't do that. So when there's literally billions of dollars, it's different. The big thing on our plate right now is education and education funding. Is just curious, is who, anybody from Virginia here? Okay, you're a Virginian. Okay. You probably don't care about the gentleman right behind you, ma'am. I'm sorry. So you may not care about some of this stuff. So, but in Tennessee, we fund education through what's called the BEP, the Basic Education Program. And if you say, how does it work? I couldn't tell you. And I'm not being sarcastic when I say there's probably only 20 people in Tennessee that can tell you how it really works. And it's an inordinately complex plan. And it's also a very bad plan, because in Tennessee, what we've been doing is budgeting and paying for programs. So we can't look at a child and say, to educate a child, little Johnny or little Janie cost us X dollars. Right? We don't know how much it costs to educate the child. It's unsatisfactory. So the governor has proposed, and what we're doing is changing that so that we have a base, and it's frankly going to be $6,860 per child. This is what it costs to put a child through school in Tennessee. And with that, and that accounts for a teacher, they're going to need a desk, they're going to need a building, a school nurse, a librarian, things like that. It's all in there. Then we have a second section that talks about how do we weight that for kids that are in a rural area or kids who are not proficient in the English language. Well, we'll weight them. So it could go from 6860 to as high as $15,000. It could change. And then since we now, or would now if we pass the bill, be able to tell how much it costs to educate the child, we'll correspondingly be able to say on return on investment, here is the movement that has happened with that child. They're able to read by grade 3, and they're doing well. So, sorry, I could keep talking on this. So, let me pause for a second. Joe, do you have tough questions, or do you want me just to open it up? Okay. Well, I just don't want to hog on things we're going through right now. The legislature is in session, and our session goes, we start the second Tuesday in January, and it goes, I'm hoping we'll be out by the end of April, probably May 1st, something like that. And just in basic government, there are, in the House of Representatives, there are 99 representatives. Each representative represents about 70,000 people. In the Senate, we have 33 senators. Each senator represents about 210,000 people. And every 10 years, like we just did, we go through a redistricting process where we change that so that we have everyone represents the same number of people. And we've had a lot of growth in Middle Tennessee that changed the dynamics quite a bit in parts of the state. So with that, I will stop and say, fire away.
All right.
And you can make them easy or hard. It's truly.
Okay.
Bring them in.
Okay, so here's a couple questions from Dave. Number one, considering the supply side strain on energy and current futures, is TVA expected to be able to provide stable, parentheses, supply and price power to Tennessee residents? What is the prognosis, and what would change the circumstances?
TVA is a federal entity, so that is a bit out of the purview, but we work closely with TVA because not only the dams and what they have, but also the wildlife and the recreational area. So TVA is everything that I've seen is under capacity right now, so I feel very confident that they'll be able to continue providing power across Tennessee well. I think they're in a solid financial position as well. And one of the blessings we have in the state is, frankly, having less expensive power costs than many other states.
Can the federal government take power from, since it's federal, can they take power from us?
I don't think it depends on the grid, I guess, and how far it'd go through. But we supply through some of the dams and I think basically a three-state region.
Are we more hardened than other states because of that system?
We are. We are. And it's a very stable power supply that we have here.
That's good to know. Okay, his second question. Over the last several years, and especially the last 2 years, Tennessee has seen marked increases in domestic immigration from states with poor ideals. How will Tennessee maintain its conservative nature and character in years to come?
Let me give a couple answers to that. I'm going to take the question two different ways. Number one is Tennessee is not anti-immigrant. We're very pro-immigrant, but we want people to be here legally. Our problem with immigration, and frankly, it is such a big problem that about 6 weeks ago we sent state guard members to Texas to help them with the border. Because the folks that are coming over the border, we all want to say and believe they all want just the better life, but frankly, some of the people coming across the border are bringing drugs.
Yes.
And
trafficking.
There's human trafficking. It is not just people bringing their families over for a better living. These are people who are, frankly, killing our folks. And it's such a big problem, especially in Northeast Tennessee, that we deployed an additional, 100 state guardsmen down to support Texas and the border. And the other concern we have, and again, the situation that we've had worldwide from refugees that are coming across the globe, we have no problem being accepting people, but we also want to know that the people that are coming have been vetted. We've chatted with them. We know from whence they came. Unfortunately, the federal government's not as open and candid with us, and we don't know where they are, where they're coming from, where they're going. We have asked the federal government multiple times for additional information, and frankly, we don't get a lot. So oftentimes, we don't get anything. That's concerning. So, long answer to a short question.
It's good to know they don't answer you, and they don't answer us.
Yeah.
We're in the same boat. They will in November, that's right. Anthony has a question. Any relief on the state gas tax?
We had a conversation about that because I was asked. Politically, this is going to sound bad. I'm not a fan of a relief on the state gas tax. And before you go, wow, he doesn't want to do that. Why not? Because I'm a conservative, I'm a Republican, I should want less taxes. Go back to when I started, I said we're a pay-as-you-go state, so if we don't have money to pay for those roads, we're not going to build roads. There are two parts to that. One, in Tennessee, 27 cents of every gallon right now is the gas tax. So if you eliminated that for the next 90 days, that would cost Tennesseans $250 million. It's a huge amount of money. Number two is, I'm going to ask you to think differently for a second. Think about this, that you are the retailer. You own a gas station, and you sell gas. And the state just came in and said, we're going to cut your prices 27 cents. What are you going to do? Rhetorical question, because if you're in business, you're going to go, I'm going to get my product 27 cents cheaper. I may pocket 17 cents. And I'll lower my prices a dime or a nickel and pocket the rest. So my fear on that would be we're going to put money back in Tennesseans' pocket, but it might be retailers. And I'm not against, I love capitalism. It's an incredible, incredibly balancing system. But
so you're saying open a gas station?
No, I'm just talking about the gas tax. I'm hesitant to do that because it hurt us on transportation and building roads and bridges and fixing them. And trust me, if you drive to Nashville sometime, and you'll realize we need some road work and bridge work. So. I remember Jimmy Carter days.
Yeah,
yes.
I was married to a gas station owner at that time, and they froze the profits. They didn't allow the station you know, to go up as the economy demanded. We had to pay the same thing, or we couldn't increase that, and yet the gas prices that were, you know, came on the truck and everything were going up. And so that hurt a lot of, you know, small gas station owners and things like that. And then I was in Virginia at the time, so I don't know if it was federal or state or whatever. We were just so annoyed at the whole thing.
You bet.
But, you know, most gasoline retailers aren't actually there to, like, to gouge the public too much.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were terrible about restricting us. And so, anyway, that's... You can always say you need to pass this on.
I agree. It'd be nice to say that. And would they... I don't know, some would. And I wasn't saying gas... Please don't take that as I was dispersing gas station owners. They're doing well, and frankly, keeping us all moving around. So, not at all. But there's a natural tendency where there's a price cut. So, if you can make additional sources of income, I get that.
Senator, Senate Bill 0361, I'm not sure what that is. Burden of proof. What does bill represent and who does it cover?
Okay, now I'm going to have to pull out my phone. And I don't know bill numbers. Okay, here's a little...
Well, Anthony, do you know what it is you were going to ask? Senate Bill 0361, Burden of Proof. What does bill represent and who does it cover? Changing the burden of proof legally when you're, like, in other words, whether you're a murder suspect or whether you're a civil matter.
Okay, I'm pulling it up right now. It looks like it would be changing the burden of proof to a preponderance of evidence. So... And that bill, it failed in the Finance Committee. So,
then you asked Senate Bill 07, Anthony, change to suspension of alcohol sales to public due to violation 16 to 90 days. What with additional offenses?
Senate Bill 7.
Yes, 0711 euro, yeah.
Bear with me. I'm going to guess that's what we would call a caption bill. Pardon me for looking at my phone while we're here, because there would be amendments on it. Oh, there's not. Right now it says it does exactly what the caption says, which would increase from 60 days to 90 days a first offense of violating liquor by the drink laws. So your license could be suspended then from... I believe there are, and I don't know if it's after two violations or within what time frame, but without question, yeah, multiple violations will get a loss of licensure. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to spice it up a little bit before we get into some medical questions from Matt.
You're going to start dancing.
I'm going to start dancing. I noticed when I was there, the Senate, in 2019, it was kind of a squad in the Senate, and they weren't in the room when I prayed. They came in after. Several of them did. There were about three or four ladies that sat in the back, and they were not there when I prayed. it came in afterward. Maybe they were just late. I've given the benefit of the doubt. But my question for you on that is, do you see a squad-type influence arising in the legislature or the Senate? I know you've always had guys like – you've had people like Steve Cohen of Memphis, you know, who's now gone on to Congress to haunt us.
Yeah.
Bad Penny.
So, yeah.
And he's a Luntzman. God help us. God forgive us. Anyway, do you see that increasing the numbers, you know, in the Senate of those who are, you know, woke, so to speak?
Our numbers in the Senate, and again, go back to first, we have 33 members of the Senate.
Yeah.
27 of them are Republican. So there are 6 Democrats. And I was disappointed when we gained the 6th because we had 5 until a few months ago, because I loved saying that you could fit the entire Democratic caucus in a Prius. So, and it's true. Now, you'd have to squeeze them into the Prius, but you could probably still get them in there. So I feel
very... Have you tried?
No. 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 And,
and put the statue of Andrew Jackson on the roof. Okay.
So, yeah, there's we've got super majorities in Tennessee. And frankly, if you look back at where we started and talked about fiscally and what's happened, you know, that's happened over the last really 14 years. And our economic position has really ratcheted up since, yeah. And not trying to be partisan in the House of the Lord, but truly what's happened is you have conservative leadership, and it shows what happens, and that's, we're a clear example. So
I have another question, but and I'll ask, Lord, remind me what it was. I've got so many things on my plate to try to get this together, but I'm going to ask you a medical question from Matt. The Republican Party historically has stood for free and fair markets, capitalism, and competition. I know this doesn't benefit the large corporations. However, it does benefit the consumer and the constituency of East Tennessee. I recently moved to the Tri-Cities area, and shortly after my arrival here, the Ballard chief executive officer was fired for performing a surgery without a medical degree or license. Appalling. A state-established healthcare monopoly is a frightening reality in the Tri-Cities, Virginia area. What is being done from a legislative perspective to correct that largest COPA-governed healthcare monopoly in the United States? Is the COPA being re-examined? Are healthcare providers given a forum to voice their concerns? What is being done?
I'll change it. We just call it the COPA. So it's the certificate of, yeah, there you go. At the COPA. Hey, that sounds pretty good that way. Music and passion words. Sorry. I know I'm being recorded on video. That'll pop up and be used against me. certificate of public advantage. And so we spell out some things. Who asked that question, Matt? And you just came here how long ago? Let me give you a little background on it. We had 2 healthcare systems here. There was what was called Mountain States Healthcare Alliance, and they operated hospitals in Johnson City, Abingdon, and a number of smaller ones. And we had Wellmont, which had Holston Valley Hospital and Bristol Regional and some smaller ones as well. Both of those systems were taking on huge amounts of debt. And Wellmont got to the point and said, we're for sale, and we'll take bids to the highest bidder. And they took in proposals from a number of entities. Mountain States was one, and their basic thing was, let's, instead of buying you, let's merge our forces together because we both have a lot of debt. There are some savings we could do, and they created Ballard. I thought it was a fascinating process because there was a lot of public discussion, and I'm a fan of exactly the free market. I think the free market is an amazingly effective tool. It works out well, candidly, without any government intervention. So it weeds out if you charge too much, if you don't have good service, you don't have good products, you're going to go out of business, and you don't need government to do that. You will just do that naturally. Healthcare was a little bit different. And the best example I can give is, do you know what a level one trauma center is? Level one trauma center, you have a surgeon in there all the time ready for trauma. Memphis has one level one trauma center. Chattanooga has one. Nashville has one. We had two. And it cost an inordinate amount of money, but both those systems before, Mountain States and Wellmont, had spent money trying to take the other one down and say, we have a level one trauma center. So we have this, we have that, we have this life flight. So at the end, I listened to, frankly, the people around here who said, we don't want to be owned by a for-profit healthcare center out of North Carolina or from a different for-profit healthcare center out of the Dakotas. Let's make it here, and let's put in, we said, okay, we're going to do that, but we're going to put in a COPA, a Certificate of Public Advantage, so that we, the state, both states, Tennessee and Virginia, can look at this, because you are creating a monopoly, potentially. How do you let other people in? So we said, you know, Ballad, you can't fight. So if somebody wants to come in and build a hospital, you can't fight that. So we're watching it. We're looking at it. You know, and I pay attention to, obviously, what people are talking about here. There's some misinformation out there. In our waits long at hospitals and ERs, sometimes they are, but they are in many places. Go ahead. Yeah, separate from Ballad, the difficult process we have in the state has been a CON, a Certificate of Need, that's required. That's separate than from Ballad. So, and Ballad, but Ballad can't fight that CON. If you decide, I want to build the Lundberg Hospital in wherever, you can do that. You do have to prove that you have the financial wherewithal to do that and take that investment on, but also that there is a need, so, for it to go on.
Senator, I'm gonna. So, we're possibly on the verge of we're when the Russians put us the world at DEFCON 2 on their scale of nuclear preparedness. We hadn't been at that level since 1962, I believe, since the Cuban Missile Crisis. And so my question is, there's tremendous threat. There's a threat of world war. You know, anything could spark it at any moment. You know, the Chinese to the west, the Russians to the east or the west, however you look at it. But you know, it seems like the bullies of the world may be looking for a fight. They're certainly looking to take down the dollar as the reserve currency of the United States, from what I can see. But on a more local level, people are suffering. A lot of people, I remember my employees when I owned a restaurant, they, even then, were having to make choices between a pack of cigarettes, food, gasoline, and this is going back, you know, 6-7 years ago. Now I imagine, you know, I met a lady at a major home center, and she said, you know, she was filing for bankruptcy. She was a single mother working at this large, you know, chain's store. She was working, honest, hardworking woman with three children, mm-hmm. filing for bankruptcy because she couldn't make her rent, she couldn't pay her bills, she just couldn't make it. And I've been told that people can live for a week without water. They can live for 3 weeks without food. But after that, they start to behave in an unbecoming way. Loot, take things that don't belong to them.
Yep.
Do you see, and is there a plan in place for such a situation arising in Tennessee? And there are a lot of poor people in the state.
Plan for which part of that? Because that was a question loaded with everything from starting with Russia and...
Well, so. I mean, there's inflation, there's all these things going on, but I guess, what is the state... I guess it's a two-part question. What is the state's position on readiness in the event of war, or even, God forbid, civil war? I've even heard talk of secession. So what is the state's position on that? You know, Texas had a movement towards secession. I think Florida may have had a movement or towards secession. Some southern states, I remember hearing a couple years ago. So how does Tennessee fall on that, into that situation, in that genre of events, with based on the way, you said before, you work for the people, but I think most people I talk to don't feel that their representatives in Washington are working for them, and they're just...
I'll tell you that there are people, that their representatives in Nashville are working for them.
Yes, in Nashville, but not in Washington.
Yeah.
On a larger scale, I guess, on a macro scale, how is prepared is Tennessee for a major crisis? We have Oak Ridge here in this state, where it could be a probable target. If things were to escalate, on a micro level, how is the state preparing for, the effects of inflation and higher costs, which are there's no end in sight as far as we can see, to how far inflation could go. What are your thoughts on that?
Security-wise, we're in great shape, and we do a lot of coordination across the state, because it's not just Oak Ridge. But if you think about this, that a couple times a year, we have 100-some-odd thousand people in one little bowl right here, and that we put them in Bristol. And if you want to talk about a target-rich environment, so...
one of the top three or four targets in the country, I believe, it's happening.
But I will tell you that the state works with multiple law enforcement throughout the region, from state patrol, U.S. agents as well that are here, come and deploy around Bristol Motor Speedway. And they do that at events at UT. They do it at Oak Ridge and throughout the state. So security-wise, I feel good about it. You know, when you talk about, one of the things you talked about was impoverished people or people are having trouble, and there are poor people here. There's no question about that. And I think we have a duty to help them, not we as the state, we as individuals, we as churches, as followers of Christ, have a duty within our hearts and a need to help. I look and I want to make certain that one of the emails that I got that was from a local person who was not doing well, said, "I would really appreciate it if you," and I'm not being sarcastic, this is what the email said, "if you'd send me a $500 or $1,000 Visa card, because that would help me out." It's like, we just...
Did you send it?
Can't do that. Now, I wish I could, but it's one of those... Times are difficult. Times are difficult for everyone here. So, it is. I will also tell you, it's difficult right now and tough for me. When you go downtown and you drive around, how many signs do you see help wanted? And if someone says, I'm out of work and I can't find a job, if you can't find a job, you are not looking for a job, number one. Or number two, you don't want to settle for $12 an hour. That's it.
Yeah.
So we have incredibly low unemployment, 3.9% right now. I would tell you we have no unemployment. So because, again, I go back to that. If you want a job, you can get one. It's, you know, when I was growing up and, you know, taught my dad, I would have liked to have a job that paid really, really well. So, but I started at minimum wage or less than minimum wage as a television news anchor and made minimum wage in Colorado Springs, believe it or not. And but it's one where so many people now, well, I want to start here. I don't want to start here. I don't want to work my way up. In life, we have to start and work our way up. You don't just become the rabbi and start. There are steps along the way that gets you to that position. So, and is it difficult? You bet it is. Absolutely. It's tough. It's not designed to be easy. I'm not being dismissive, but we spend a lot of money with Second Harvest Food Bank in the state, and we do a lot of support that way. So I think we do a great deal of outreach. But again, if you said what is it, it's frankly up to us as individuals.
Do you feel that because of the racetrack, that we are one of the most prepared for areas in the state, most prepared areas for a crisis, because you know we have of the influx of 100,000 to 200,000 people a couple times a year that the police and the authorities have been prepared and trained, specially trained to deal with crowd control and situations.
Yes, short answer. Yeah,
good.
We are.
All right, fantastic. Bill, did you have any questions that I may not have? And if so, could somebody bring him a mic?
I could run back there. I could feel like remember Phil Donahue.
It's okay that he's going to bring him a mic. And while he's doing that, I'm going to ask you, Matt has another question. Is there a plan to end discrimination based on vaccination status in Tennessee?
We've passed multiple state laws that there's no vaccine passport. You can't require a vaccine. I will tell you my personal feelings. I've had both vaccines, and I also, strangely, both vaccines, both shots on a booster. And I got COVID 10 days after my second shot. I think getting the vaccine is a healthy, good thing. I would suggest you do it. So if you don't want to, don't get it. One member of my family, our daughter, is an anti-vaxxer. So
there's one choice. In every family.
There's one in every family. and that's fine. And frankly, you know, especially for women, to be completely sexist here, when you're in childbearing years, I would probably have some concerns about getting a shot, and getting a vaccine. Do I believe it's been tested? I think so, but
yeah.
There are no mandates in here. You can't be fired for not getting a vaccination. So in Tennessee, we've taken care of what's the most important thing to us, and why people are moving here is because we treasure individual liberty overall. So,
Bill, in the back, you had some couple questions.
Sir.
I'll try to follow up on what Joe was saying.
A little closer to the mic, Bill.
Okay, how's that?
That's good.
Okay, well, gee, that's great. Joe was talking about, well, let's just get it out there, Civil War. Now, that just doesn't happen. You need a real motivator for people to suddenly wake up one day and say, everything's crazy, and I'm going to go out in the street and raise hell. One thing that might cause that would be a breakdown of the monetary system. One of Wall Street's leading experts in commodities and currencies came out the other day and said that the world is on the verge of a period of currency turmoil, one which would lead to repeat of the Bretton Woods process. Between the time the breakdown starts and the time the new Bretton Woods agreement is reached, there's going to be a lot of confusion. We're already looking at 8% inflation right now, and that 8% inflation is based on measurements that were developed following the great inflation of the 70s and 80s. So some would say we're understating inflation by as much as 5 to 10%. Is the state of Tennessee investigating alternate currency methodologies to carry us through a period of crisis? And by that I would say, is the state investigating bringing home its gold and having its own gold reserve? Is the state investigating looking at gold and silver as an alternate currency in the face of runaway inflation? Is the state looking at means of dealing with cryptocurrency or providing defense to the citizens of Tennessee against a federally issued cryptocurrency where the Fed can pretty much, and the federal government can pretty much, monitor every purchase made by citizens of Tennessee?
Short answer, yes. So there's been discussion about that. In fact, building a depository in western Tennessee. So, and the funds have been set aside to do that, private funds actually, to set up a gold depository. Those discussions are taking place. Where are they? They're taking place. And I say that, is anything formalized? And if you take that is Tennessee seceding? Absolutely not. We're not seceding from the Union. I'll tell you, I'm privileged to live in Tennessee. We are all privileged to be in the United States. And people can say, well, it's political when you say that. No, it's not. It's not. It clearly is the strongest, most free, and vibrant country ever in the history of the planet. And, you know, and you served in the Marines. So, and we've got a lot of folks who have served in here. So the last thing we want to do is separate. The one thing we want to do is make us all stronger. And so those conversations are taking place, and because currency and currency concerns are real. And as far as where it goes, or if you want to get into detail at a different level, I'm not trying to be evasive. I'd have to bring people in from my staff to go into another level, because some of it I'm still a little fuzzy on how this works. And I get concerned even on Venmoing my kids. And it's like, why does everybody see that I just sent $50, or somebody just sent me $50?
We understand that there's things you may not be able to just discuss publicly like this in a forum, but is it something that is being discussed?
Absolutely.
It is.
Yeah.
So there's things you may not be able to share with us, yeah, but
those conversations are taking place.
Right, they are taking place. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Bill, do you have a follow-up?
No, that's
okay. You sure? Okay. Ammo supply? Anyway, okay. So another medical question. Medical constitutional amendments proposes adding a provision to Article 1 of the Constitution of Tennessee to declare an individual right to refuse medical treatment and to require that an individual's other rights not be denied or abridged due to the individual exercising the right to refuse medical treatment. Medical freedom is the topic of the question. Is that clear, or do you want me to reread it?
No, help me out. So I haven't seen the constitutional amendment on that. I haven't.
All right, Matt, that's Matt's question. Yeah. Medical Matt. Major Matt the medic.
And mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you were
lose your job, lose your ability to buy or sell.
Not in Tennessee, but yeah. Yes.
Well,
yeah.
I live in Tennessee, and I can't walk into, my company has offices here in Tennessee. I can't walk into those offices.
Now, do they have federal funding through CMS or
yes.
some entity?
Yeah.
That would be the exception, so because they would lose federal funds, and we couldn't risk those companies being wiped out because of that. So.
So the federal government can require me to participate in a medical experiment?
You know, I would. If we could all elect conservative Republicans, I think that would change across the board.
It doesn't have anything to do with conservatism or liberalism. It has everything to do with medical ethics, morality. That's what it has. And the Nuremberg Code, did that go away? Did I wake up one morning and the Nuremberg Code doesn't exist anymore?
Well, that's why in Tennessee you've seen moves to give people back their freedoms to do whatever, but not to wipe out companies at the same time. So you have seen, even in Tennessee 3 years ago, we passed, in fact, it was my bill in the Senate, the right to try. So if you have a terminal illness, people didn't have ability to try experimental drugs. They'd have to go somewhere else. To me, when you're at those stages, if you want to try whatever it is you want to try, that's up to you. It's your body. So
physicians here in East Tennessee could not prescribe off-label to treat COVID. They had to go to independent compounding pharmacies because of the monopoly, the Ballad monopoly that I was referencing earlier, dictating how they practice medicine.
Okay. I'd have to go more on that. But
Dr. Sibley just testified in Nashville like a couple of weeks ago. She's a East Tennessee physician.
Okay.
Treated thousands of COVID patients using ivermectin, using hydroxychloroquine, zero deaths, zero hospitalizations. But she has to do it on the sly. She has to, if I get sick with COVID, I may have to go to a pharmacy, in Kingsport or in Johnson City or something, because she can't get it filled here.
Just
a very weird situation that we're in. And you mentioned vaccine. I'm just going to call it what it is. It's a medical experiment.
Sure.
Never used in humans before, but mandated by our federal government. That's just shocking.
Disappointing. So,
disappointing is one way to reference it.
Yeah.
Shocking, appalling, and that's another avenue for civil war. I mean, when the government starts mandating things like that, people are going to fight.
Yeah, that's why we as a state fought back. So,
Senator, is there a frustration in the state Senate about with the governor about states' rights versus federal intrusion? Is that becoming a bigger issue as you've served?
It changes with the federal administration, because some federal administrations respect states' rights, and some, like the current one, don't. So, and believe a more centralized power is more effective. We have always believed, and we as conservatives have always believed, that it is at the local level where decisions need to be made. So,
is there a general consensus that there's intrusion on states' rights?
Yes. Yeah.
And do you feel, as we feel, many of us feel helpless, we can vote, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything anymore to, the way things are going with mail-in ballots and so forth. Do you feel do you feel powerless, or do you feel that there's something?
No, I don't feel powerless at all. So I think the power is truly with the people, and I think when we get complacent and go, it's not going to matter, our vote won't matter, then we have given up our power.
Yeah.
We have given up our ability to do anything, so whether it's at the local level, the state, or the federal level. And I think that's critical, so to stay engaged. Let me, by the way, can I make a sales pitch for a second on that? Because at the federal government level, our congressmen and federal senators can change our life in a year or two. I can change someone's life in 6 months to a year. your school board and city council can change your life tomorrow. Do you know how many people are in the school board? There are 3 seats open.
In Bristol?
In Bristol. So far, 2 people are running in 2 districts. They don't even have a candidate in another one. If
where? Which district?
The Eastern District. So, and I'd have to pull out the map to take a look at that. I'm horrified by that. So, that people aren't stepping up and going, we need to get involved. Because if you don't get involved in your school board or city council, and you go, well, that's not as important. It's more important.
Yes, it is.
It's more important at the level.
Yeah.
And
it
so
controls the police. It affects all the
everything.
Everything.
So if I would, you know, if you've got an interest, so and talk about it. Get people active and involved, running for city council, county commission, or school board. I'm horrified when I heard that we don't even have enough candidates for our school board.
Would that be the Holston Ave district?
The Eastern District is out toward King College.
Okay.
So, that area. So,
Tom has a question. Billy, would you bring him the microphone, please?
Good afternoon, sir. I want to follow up on Matt's question because you made a comment about the economic impact on the companies in the state that receive federal funds. And being a little familiar with that because I'm involved with business in that area, federal contracts often levy a variety of different requirements for those type of businesses, and then they can change as the administrations change as well. And your comment just triggers, does not the state of Tennessee potentially have standing in a lawsuit against the federal government on the economic impact, where you're looking at money as people take stands and they're forcing them into unconstitutional choices? It seems like, and my question is in general, is that angle being discussed, that the state of Tennessee has standing potentially in a civil lawsuit?
Yeah, and our Attorney General, Herbert Slattery, we've been in court with the government multiple times, and I think you can see pretty easily that our legislature and our governor are not concerned about going head-to-head that way. So I'm certain for the next few years, hopefully only 2 more years, that we'll be taking issue with the federal government and the trajectory it's on.
That would be encouragement for the whole union to see that type of thing going on and progress. So my compliments to the state of Tennessee. My parents live in Tennessee. Sometimes I think I should have moved to Tennessee.
Come on over. You're welcome. You're welcome to come over. So
couldn't resist the joke.
So, well, I'll tell you what. I've gone 1 hour and 15 minutes. You want me to keep going?
I think I've got one more question here. Does anybody else in the room have another question before Sharon? Billy, could you bring Sharon the microphone, please? And Don has a question.
Yes, I actually have 2 questions. One of them is important, the other one isn't. The important one is, who controls the curriculum of the schools?
It's up to the locality to pick what are approved by the State Board of Education. So we approve various textbooks, and the locality can approve which textbooks amongst this group to utilize.
Okay, that's leading up to whether CRT is taught in Tennessee.
No, we banned it. We banned that discussion. It's a Marxist
true
propaganda. So.
And my unimportant one, it's about the Wildlife Association, you know, the Tennessee Wildlife Federation. How are they paid? A few years ago, it was my understanding that they got their funding from the fines and confiscations that they made. Has that changed so that Tennessee is actually funding the Wildlife Association?
I'd have to pull the numbers. I'm not 100% certain. They get certainly a portion of their funding comes from fines and fees. I don't think that would be enough to cover their entire budget. So I can find out. As I leave, would you give me a card or some way of getting in touch with you? I can find out the answer to it for you.
Sure.
So, no
sure
problem.
Can. Thank you.
Yeah.
Dawn, my wife has a question.
Oh, Senator, as you know, I'm quite invested in aviation, mm-hmm. so I have an aviation question, which is previously there had been a lot of talks about bringing a full aviation course into Northeast State Northeast State Tech College, but it seemed to fail at some point. I think we've got a mechanics program, but not an aviation, not a flight program. And I know that we've got one at Middle Tennessee State University, but what is the plan for aviation as far as development in East Tennessee?
Yeah, I haven't heard any. MTSU's got an incredible program. In fact, met with their president last week or the week before and talking about the air. And they're actually moving part of their campus to a different airport to handle all the planes and the traffic that they have. I think it's really important in Northeast Tennessee to have that, because we spent a lot of money, not only as a region but a state, in Aerospace Park next to the airport. Basically, we built an aviation industrial park next to the airport. So we paid to have that land leveled so we could attract, whether it was FedEx for maintenance issues, because those are huge dollars. Not to move FedEx, obviously, from Memphis or Delta from Atlanta, but for aviation. I would tell you that a lot of it goes to the local level of even at the high school. Sullivan County had a program where you could learn to fly and solo and get a private pilot's license, and they got away from that program. I'm disappointed in that, but it's not a state program, so just as a citizen, I'm hurt by that. And you're not the only one, by the way, interested in aviation. My father was a pilot, so I'm biased that way. So Northeast State, I don't know their plans aviation-wise to go further. They're well positioned to do that if they wanted, and I'll have that conversation though.
Yes, I know everything is about funding, and you know, I don't know, people willing to step in and develop the program. But I think we have one of the best airports in Tennessee for flight training, and this area is just really set up for that. I know that the controllers are very friendly, and if we could get flight training here going, it would be great.
Yeah, I agree.
Matt has one last medical question, then I have one final question, and I'll let you go. Is that okay?
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. Matt's question is about retribution to physicians regarding, okay, I'll read it. As introduced, healthcare as introduced prohibits a licensing board or disciplinary subcommittee from taking action against a physician's license based solely on the physician's recommendations to a patient regarding treatment for COVID-19 subject to certain conditions, prohibits a pharmacy from blocking or attempting to block a patient's access to COVID-19 treatments in certain circumstances. What's the question, Matt?
Okay. And then once again, you know, what kind of dystopian world are we living in that we even have to address this with our legislature?
That bill failed in health.
Of course
so.
It did.
By the way, on that, I should probably explain, every senator sits on at least two committees. I sit on the Judiciary Committee and the Finance Committee, and I'm the chairman of the Education Committee. So like the testimony you talked about, the doctor presented last week, mm-hmm. would have been in health.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have heard it. So unless...
But you are hearing that doctors can't prescribe ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine.
I have heard that. So I have no problem with them prescribing whatever they want. But I want to make certain that when we put this down, even though we intend for it to do this, but the ramifications become much larger. What if I decided I'm just whack out crazy, and I think I'm not being sarcastic. Milk will cure cancer. I think you should go home and drink gallons. And I know I'm not trying to be sarcastic.
No, there is scientific literature that supports why you would want to treat SARS coronavirus with ivermectin.
And I'm not arguing that. And I agree with it. What I'm saying is, though, you potentially give a blanket immunity to somebody who is clearly, to every other person in the state, going off the deep end. We've got to have a box there. So, and again, I didn't hear the debate. I didn't know about it. So
very, very. I wish you did have a purview over the healthcare sector. It would be very interesting. But thanks. Thanks for tackling that as best you could.
I'm gonna ask the last question. With the supply chain issues, with going back to inflation, going back to war, and you know the percentage of grain produced in Russia, and the percentage of grain produced in Ukraine. And the whole shifting of commodity purchasing, now Canada's offering us gasoline and we're buying from Venezuela. Is the Senate and the legislature, are they concerned about food supply in the state of Tennessee? Is there a concern, you know, for just basic essentials being on the shelves? I know a lot of medicine is produced in China. We're considering, you know, sanctioning China because they're supporting Russia in the war. Mm-hmm. It affects us even at the local level. If they do that, if we sanction China and then they sanction us back, you know.
Yeah. Are we worried about the shelves being stocked? Not particularly. So now, in my personal... Just me personally, I look and with the price of gas to go, hey, now more people are going to drill in the U.S. Things are going to come back to the U.S. because it's financially better for them to do that. It's like computer chips. You can't buy a car and the price of cars. If we can manufacture chips here, so, and without government intervention, just again, the law of supply and demand says it's getting more attractive for businesses to set up. But before, when it was so cheap to go to China or cheap to go to Russia for grain, well, now it's not. And I think it's a lesson that's a difficult lesson for companies to learn, that also when that supply chain is cut off, it costs you a lot of money to resource and remove it back to where we're self-sufficient. I think that's a good thing for us to be self-sufficient that way.
Follow-up, a lot of those ingredients for electric vehicles come from those countries. And we may not have, they're not only skyrocketing in price right now. Do you see electric vehicles, do you see them as realistic? And are car lots empty because they're waiting for electric vehicles, or is there really a shortage of chips and they can't get ICE vehicles?
There's really a shortage of chips. I was talking to a couple car dealers, and I was fascinated, never thought about it, but they said, realize, and I didn't know, because my impression is it's a chip or two that goes into a car, and I said, John, each car has hundreds of chips. You know, you have a chip for your GPS, you have a chip for your stereo, you have a chip for the front lights, and chip for the back lights, and a chip for this. There's not just one, there's hundreds of chips. So, and are electric vehicles coming? Yeah, you know, 5 years ago, we'd drive down the road and go, whoa, that's a Tesla. That's cool. That looks wild. Now you see them all over the place.
I'm going to buy a golf cart.
So I'm with you. So, yeah.
Senator, thank you for coming today. It's been really an honor and a blessing to us. I think you've encouraged people. Have you all been encouraged? Let's give a round of applause.
Well, thank you. If I may, if there's a question you didn't want to ask publicly and you want to ask privately, feel free to free to share my phone number, my cell phone, my email address. I would be happy to answer your question. You have, for a lot of you, it's the first time you've heard me. You know one thing about me. I'm pretty candid with my statements and what I believe. So with some people, that offends them because I don't say what they want. Sorry. So I'll be very candid with you. And thank you for what you do. Not this, but frankly this. And it's more important than anything any of us could do. So thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure. I thought it was john.lundberg@tennessee.gov, but you like that pen? Thank you. Thank you.
Keep it up.
Thank you.
Thank
God
you.
Bless you. Have a great day. Let's give him another round of applause. Thank you. All right, we will. We are going to have service. We'll take about a 5 to 10 minute break and prepare for service. Service will be abbreviated. We're not going to go through complete liturgy today. We're just going to do a couple things and do worship, and then we'll go into the message. I'm going to teach on Esther. We're moving on from the beast, and so we'll talk about Esther today as we prepare for Purim. So feel free to stand up, take a break, stretch, those who are staying, and we'll start in about 5 to 10 minutes, okay? Okay, Carolyn?